You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Hi, this is Phil Rogers, MLB.com Extras, National League Central Edition, talking about a division that sent one team to the NLCS last year, a couple to the playoffs, and top to bottom with the Chicago Cubs improving, hiring Joe Maddon as the manager. Looks like it's going to be one of the deepest divisions in baseball in 2015. All sorts of activity up and down the division, so it's going to be fun to watch the NL Central, the hot stove, see what goes on this offseason. We're missing Jen Langosch, the Cardinals beat writer. She's being a good citizen, taking care of some responsibilities this week. So in her place, we have Cardinals broadcaster Mike Claiborne. Mike, thanks very much for filling in for Jen.
Well, that's a tall task considering how good of a writer she is, but I'll try and do the best I can.
All right, I know you will, and all of us who are not around the Cardinals on a regular basis, feeling really thinking a lot about the organization, feeling for the organization after the car accident that took the life of Oscar Tavares, guy that was counted on to be a big part of the Cardinals' future, and more importantly, a teammate to a lot of guys and a bright light around the organization. How? I mean, this is a silly question. I don't know if there is an answer, but how do the Cardinals move past that and deal with that going forward?
Well, you know, it's a tough situation for sure, considering that Oscar had been with the organization since the age of 16. But you do have to turn the page, and that's what the Cardinals are in the process of doing now. Obviously, their offseason will change a little bit with regard to the depth chart. And they'll have to make a decision on whether they need to go outside of the organization to find some additional help to play right field. You know, we had a couple of players this past season. Randall Grichuk played a majority down the stretch, and I'm sure he's going to get an even longer look. But that was his first major league experience, considering last season he was in Double A. So the Cardinals may be looking around to try and find someone with a little bit more experience and maybe a little bit more versatility. But it certainly changed the dynamics of this organization, because there were some real high hopes on Oscar Tavares really coming into his own this upcoming season.
Well, and just touching on a couple other things from the playoffs, Cardinals eliminated in five games in the championship series by the Giants, who seem to be the only team that has figured out how to match up with the Cardinals in the postseason. And this time a lot of it had to do with the number one starter of the Giants, Madison Bumgarner, who then rolled on and put away the Royals in the World Series. Watching Bumgarner in the World Series, that was no surprise to anybody who saw him in the NLCS, was it, Mike?
No, it wasn't. You know, fortunately, the Cardinals have had reasonable success against him, but he's a dynamic pitcher. And when you think about him and Clayton Kershaw, both in the same division, throw in Adam Wainwright, you're going to have three guys that are going to have their names mentioned for the Cy Young for a few more years. But Bumgarner was outstanding, and it'll be interesting to see how teams deal with their pitchers in the future, considering Bumgarner was able to come back on short rest. He threw an excessive amount of pitches compared to what most pitchers do. So it'll be interesting to see if other teams may push the envelope with some of their young pitchers.
Well, and speaking of Adam Wainwright, in that game five, actually outpitched Bumgarner, only gave up two runs in seven innings, but clearly wasn't the same guy even down the stretch as he pushed his way to the 20 wins and throughout the playoffs, not at 100%. He's had a minor elbow procedure. You expect him to be back up and full strength and maybe even feeling like he got something, you know, some weight off his shoulders when spring training rolls around?
Oh, yeah, I really do. The surgery, as you mentioned, was minor. They just wanted to do a little debridement around his elbow. There was a little bit of a irritation from some bone spurs, and they got it all cleaned up, and he'll be ready to go for spring training. And hopefully, you know, he can stay healthy for the remainder of the year. You know, he pitched on guts down the stretch, because it had been bothering him for quite some time. And obviously in game five, that he pitched as well as we've seen him pitch in a long time. So I expect him, along with the Cardinals, to be back and ready to go come spring training.
Yeah, looking at looking at the roster, I mean, it shapes up to be a very set team, and maybe even more so than coming into the 2014 season. If you put it all down on paper now, the rotation all seems to be coming back. The bullpen, a lot coming back there, and the lineup. Yet, it was a lineup that was 10th in the National League in runs scored, and I think quite surprisingly last in home runs in the National League. You have any thoughts on how John Mozeliak may kind of look in and figure out a way to get more production out of that lineup as he plans for the 2015 season?
Well, I think, first of all, I don't know if the Cardinals will rest on their laurels with regard to the lineup. John Mozeliak has always proven to be a guy who continues to find a way to subtly improve the ball club. With that said, he's not going to go out and make a deal just for the sake of making one. I mean, there's some areas that they'd like to improve in. As far as the home runs were concerned, I just thought it was one of those years. They just didn't have the productivity that they were looking for. Alan Craig was a guy they were really counting on, and that didn't work, so they eventually moved him. They thought Oscar Tavares would turn in a few more home runs. That didn't work. And then there were some other guys who were just down. When you look at a guy like Matt Holliday, who had struggled most of the early part of the season, there were a few things that just didn't work well, so the Cardinals had to figure a way to manufacture runs more than hit home runs. I expect them to be a little bit more productive when it comes to home runs this upcoming year, because I think it was just one of those seasons where it just didn't work. They have too many good hitters on this ball club to have another year like that.
Well, I look at Matt Adams, old Slippery Rock, I call him, for his alma mater. He seemed to me, April through September, very, very steady, very consistent, and kind of everything you'd want, but he just didn't elevate a lot of balls to get him out of the ballpark. Do you think, is he under the gun a little bit for not having hit the home runs, or, is there just kind of the expectation he's a young hitter with power and those numbers are going to come?
Well, I don't know if I'd say he's under the gun. I think he had to make some adjustments. Teams in the first part of the season really put the shift on him, and I think he was trying to figure out how to work through that. Matt Adams is always going to hit for average, in my opinion. Now, I know he's a big, strong guy, and he looks like he can hit for power, and he might. But I think that's something that they've got to address, or he's got to address, with regard to what sort of player he's going to be. Playing at a corner position, you would hope to have a few more home runs. So that'll be something we'll have to take a look at when spring training comes along, to make sure he doesn't get obsessed with trying to hit home runs and then suffers an average and all of a sudden he starts to strike out more and perhaps hit into a few more double plays. You don't want that. You want a guy to be able to put the ball in play. So I think he's a guy that's also at a crossroads where he's got to figure out what kind of contributor he's going to be.
Do you think the postseason is going to be a huge plus for Colton Wong? I mean, he was the guy that was just seemed to be killing the ball every time up, and you saw that explosiveness with his bat that I think the Cardinals, the farm system, the scouts, everybody knew was there. But maybe as he settled into the big leagues, it's taken him a little bit of time to get that. But, man, what an October that guy had. And looks like for 2015, he could become one of the most offensive second basemen in baseball.
He had a coming out party this year. If you recall, the World Series didn't go well for him in 2013. And so he had to atone for some of that. He really came into his own offensively because this is the most home runs he's ever hit at any level. I'm not going to say he's a home run hitter, but I think he's a guy that understands the strike zone a little bit better. And I think he knows what his strike zone is going to be. And once he understands that, he'll be more selective. And I think you can see him be a guy much like what we see with Matt Carpenter, a guy who makes pitchers throw strikes before he starts swinging. And maybe Colton Wong can be that next guy. You can hit him second. You can hit him eighth. A pretty versatile player. An exceptional defender with a very good throwing arm. And I think that was one of the reasons why Mike Matheny continued to put him in the lineup, even when he struggled from time to time.
Do you see the Cardinals possibly having some enough depth in the starting pitching to think about trading one of those younger guys to get a bat to the lineup to kind of make that move? That, I mean, you're exactly right about the Cardinals' operation. I mean, they're not going to stand pat. They're going to look to find changes, and it looks like you're hearing a little bit of talk about, I don't know if it's because Marco Gonzalez stepped forward so much, maybe they're going to get Garcia back, but that they, you know, maybe this is the time the Cardinals might use some of that pitching inventory to import a really good young hitter.
You know, that's a great question, and it's one that we ask around here every year, it seems like. I'm one of those believers that you never have enough good pitching, and the best example is the Cardinals found themselves a little starting pitching, and all of a sudden here comes Marco Gonzalez, who was in Double-A at one point this year. So that ought to let you know that you never have enough good pitching. But I think that they are at a logjam with regard to the number of young pitchers that they have to find spots for, whether it's going to be in the starting rotation or perhaps coming out of the bullpen. You mentioned Gonzalez. Carlos Martinez is a guy who has starting material. They've got a couple of kids in AAA that are ready to come up. So they've got some real questions to be asked. But when you look at their current rotation of Wainwright, Waka, Lance Lynn, John Lackey, and you can choose Shelby Miller, Marco Gonzalez, and or Carlos Martinez as that fifth starter. So you've got plenty of guys who are out there. But I think they want to see if they can compete for us, which means spring training will be even more challenging because there are only so many innings you're going to get in spring training. So you've got to, you know, the Cardinal pitching coach, Derek Lillequist, and obviously Mike Matheny are going to have to pay close attention because every pitch will count this year in spring training with regard to someone coming in and being part of the rotation.
Well, it's going to be a very interesting off-season leading up to hot stove season leading into spring training. Mike Claiborne, thanks very much for filling in for Jennifer Langosch, joined by Tom Singer, talking about a very interesting Pirates team coming off another very interesting season in that very competitive National League Central. Tom, just when you look at the Pirates now as they head full steam into the hot stove season, it's kind of the rotation that jumps out at you that they have behind Garrett Cole a whole lot of question marks with the health of Charlie Morton, who had the hip surgery, and the free agency of Francisco Liriano, Edinson Volquez. Any reason that situation is less volatile than it would seem? It seems like it would be the obvious focus of the Pirates at this point.
Oh, absolutely. And it's also a somewhat interesting scenario. You mentioned Charlie Morton. There's another guy in that injury-delayed mix, Jameson Taillon, who's coming off Tommy John surgery. But ideally, in a perfect world, they could both be major contributors by the second half of this upcoming season, which definitely affects how you go about reconstructing your rotation. So the GM, Neil Huntington, has a pretty major assignment. Francisco Liriano, has been contemplating what to do about the qualifying offer he got. The Pirates may negotiate off that if he accepts a two-year deal, but they don't like to go any longer for a starting pitcher. So, I mean, it depends what kind of feedback Liriano received in a few days. He had to make up his mind. But beyond that, the two incumbents in the rotation are Jeff Locke and Vance Worley, both of whom were mid-season plug-ins last year, so that they kind of played the role that Morton and Taillon might play in 2015. So it's a very interesting scenario with a lot of moving pieces.
Yeah, absolutely. And I probably should have started with this question, but I'll throw it in there. Just how painful was it, you think, for the Pirates who were one and done in that wild card against the Giants to watch the Giants celebrate a world championship? I mean, does that there's got to be an element to the Pirates of thinking, man, if we could have won that game, who knows, maybe that could have been us going the distance.
Exactly, but in the side, you know, on the flip side of that, I think it might have eased the blow of having been so dominated by Madison Bumgarner in a wild card game, because Madison went on and dominated everybody else. So that doesn't make you feel like you missed a huge opportunity. It kind of makes you feel like one of his many victims. But obviously, if they would have overcome Bumgarner, then the whole postseason changes. So it's an interesting toss-up question. But from a fan's perspective, and I can kind of put myself in their place a little bit better than I can in the player's place, I think that kind of, you know, eased the shock of the quick exit, because the guy who kicked him out of the postseason went on and did that to everybody else.
Yeah, absolutely. And a red-hot team that was scoring runs against pretty much everybody they faced through the whole postseason, too, with Hunter Pence and the other guys that were just getting it done for the Giants. So looking again at the hot stove, I mean, also the question, Russell Martin's free agency along with Liriano, obviously before you get to free agency, the team has had some chances to talk about a contract extension, and I mean, it seems like clear that Russell Martin is viewing this as his opportunity to get a, the biggest contract of his career. Any chance at this point that the Pirates can step up and hang on to him? I know obviously they would love to do it, but it seems like it's a daunting task.
Well, there's always a chance, but the overwhelming theme with Martin is when he came to Pittsburgh, he had a chance to sign a longer contract than the 2 years that he did sign, and he was very upfront about it. He wanted only a two-year contract, because his agenda was to reestablish his market value. And the implication in that confession was that then, you know, he would go, you know, beyond. So essentially he did what he wanted to do. And having done that, why would you lower your sights and not seek the biggest contract you can on the market? I mean, that's basically what the Pirates are up against. They'll definitely step up for Martin, who already signed the richest free agent contract, although it's very conservative. The Pirates have ever given anybody. So I think they'll definitely once again go beyond that. But I don't think they can keep up with the market will offer Martin. A lot of teams are looking for catchers, and he is by far the premium catcher on the free agent market. And it's a tough financially competitive environment for Pirates in which to compete. I just don't see it as being very optimistic.
Tom, looking at guys in their system, watching the Arizona Fall Stars game, Josh Bell, highly regarded outfielder, but now seeing some time in Arizona at first base. Does that kind of speak to the organization's hopes that they can produce a guy that will lock up this first base position where they've kind of rotated, traded for Ike Davis last year, helped them some, traded for Sanchez the year before. Could Josh Bell develop into a homegrown answer that locks that position up for a while?
Well, that was certainly the intent. But from what I've seen and even Josh himself has confessed to, it has not gone too smoothly. I don't know if they'll experiment with him at first base beyond the Arizona Fall League. The downside of him playing first base is it removes a lot of the athleticism he showed in the outfield. He seems to be very tentative and mechanical around the base, but maybe that's because it's a totally new position for him. My takeaway at the moment is that transition has not gone well. The Pirates wanted to see if it was a logical move to make, and they may have reached the conclusion that that's not his best position. And the reason they wanted to get a read on him at first base, obviously there's no room in the Pittsburgh outfield for him, and there's no sense that, you know, any opening will created in the near future. So I think perhaps they wanted to get a read on him at first base, and if it's not going to work, I think he could be a very desirable in the trade piece. He could be somebody that would be the centerpiece of a major trade where the Pirates could pick up the first baseman, maybe a catcher. So I think the Pirates will never tip their hand, but I think what they wanted to find out whether it's a sensible thing for him to do, and if it doesn't work, well, then, you know, we'll have to perhaps, include him and make him available in trade, basically.
With Harrison emerging and being, for long stretches last year, you know, way above average third baseman, could a position change be in the move with Pedro Alvarez across on a permanent basis from third base to first base? And do you think that's something that could be resolved before they head toward Bradenton?
That's a pretty tough question, for the simple reason that that would be ideal if Alvarez, who did play a little first base late season and looked to be comfortable. But the perception is that Alvarez wants to reestablish himself as a premier third baseman, a status he certainly enjoyed until developing the throwing issues last season. So he definitely wants to reestablish himself at third base, which obviously leaves first base as a major hole, and also would displace Josh Harrison. I mean, what do you do with Josh, who was probably the team's most valuable player last season? It's a very tricky situation with the Pedro. I don't see any early resolution to that. I think they'll go to spring training with Alvarez as their third baseman and kind of find a place for Harrison someplace else. It's a very tough situation for the general manager, who doesn't want to give up on Alvarez, obviously, because he represents, the Huntington regime's first number one draft pick. So they have a lot invested in him. And if he wants to play third base, I think he'll be given a chance.
Well, a lot of time to go in the hot stove season. A lot of things could change and shake out, but we're off to an interesting start and a lot of things to look at with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Thanks very much for Tom Singer, joined by Adam McKelvey, and we're talking about a Brewers team that has maybe they're getting their shopping done early. I always try to have my holiday shopping done by around Thanksgiving. But you look at Doug Melvin going back to the trade late in the year for Jonathan Broxton, making it either less of an issue or a non-issue that Francisco Rodriguez has hit free agency. And then on top of that, the trade for Adam Lind and the working out a decision with that brings Aramis Ramirez back with a mutual option. How busy have these guys been? It's been a running start to a hot stove, hasn't it, Adam?
Yeah, and it's what's interesting now is, you can sort of see their team versus, short of the usual bullpen moves that every team has to make every winter. This Brewers team is potentially set. And in the wake of the Lind trade, I asked Doug Melvin about that. Does this basically, keep you from having to shop the rest of the winter? And he said potentially yes, although he did leave open the door for, I believe the phrase he used was, a shakeup. And that's what they're going to have to decide now, is the problems that this team had in the second half, mostly offensively. Can they count on bringing most of this core of the team back and avoiding that sort of a fall off in 2015? Can they count, in other words, on the guys they've got being better for a full season? If they answer that question with some more questions, I think there is the possibility that this Brewers team could make some, still some dramatic moves. It would be on the trade front. I don't know if that's likely, but it's at least a possibility, and what they have now is the luxury, like I said, of having a team intact. They don't need to go out and make any major additions. And they can kind of have these big picture discussions with, you know, with that team in place as the backdrop.
Well, given Ryan Braun's situation with his thumb, which now he's finally had the surgery and the hope that that is going to give him some relief going into next year, injuries at different times of the year, the fall off in performance, perhaps understandably from Gene Segura, who had a very difficult year. You know, the fact that they were still with all of that sixth in the league in scoring, the thing that interests me or that jumps out at me is that with what looks to me a very good starting rotation, they were somehow still 10th in the league in runs allowed. And if there was this shakeup that Doug Melvin alluded to, do you think it might be some of these starting pitchers that would appear to have security? I mean, you think the way Willie Peralta emerged this year, along with Yo Gallardo, Kyle Loesch, and Matt Garza, I mean, that's a very solid front first four. Do you see all four of those guys coming back next year?
I probably do, Phil. I mean, I think that's an area where they're, you know, they've got some stability. You do have Gallardo and Loesch both going into the last year of their contracts, and, you know, that will always lead to some questions. And if a team calls the Brewers, a team that's looking for pitching, it'd be one of those guys that they probably ask about, you know, because the perception would be that they may be available. But I don't know that that's a deal the Brewers would be willing to make. I think the thing that they'll look at is the offense. And, you know, you talked about the overall numbers, but really it was two dramatically different halves. In the first half of the season, they were the best offense shy of 5,000 feet. In other words, in every category, the only team that was better were the Rockies, whose numbers are always skewed by Coors Field. The Brewers were very good offensively. In the second half, only one team scored fewer runs per game. It was the Cincinnati Reds in the National League. So the Brewers really just fell off the map offensively in the second half, and it was a team-wide thing. Ryan Braun sort of falling off played a big role in it. But, you know, Aramis Ramirez had a down year. You mentioned Gene Segura. Some of the young players, you know, went through prolonged cold stretches. It all happened at once. And the question the Brewers need to answer is, like I said, can those players come back and avoid that sort of fall off collectively? And there are reasons to believe they can. You know, the Ryan Braun surgery. If that thumb issue is not even resolved, but just made better than it was this year, he should be a better player, a better contributor at the plate than he was in 2014. Segura is probably somewhere between the all-star player he was in 2013 and the guy he was last season, when, as you referenced, he had, you know, personal tragedy that had to affect what happened to him. You can kind of go around the diamond with this team. Chris Davis and Scooter Gennett, their left fielder and second baseman, will be going into their second full seasons in the major leagues. I think you expect more stability from a player like that. So there are reasons as you go around the team to think that they should be better offensively, or at least should be able to avoid the dramatic losing streak that they endured in the second half of last season. And when you look then at the fact that the starting pitching is pretty good, pretty stable, they've got a closer in Jonathan Broxton. You know, you can kind of look at this team and see a scenario in which they contend. And again, the question that Doug Melvin and his baseball people need to answer is, are they good enough as they're currently constructed to win the division? Because that the owner made clear that that's the goal. At least, you know, for 2015, that's the goal. Whether or not they'll step back and rebuild later remains to be seen, but not this year. So I think there are still some discussions to be had there in that front office about where they stand. And, you know, as I said from the start, the beauty of this is, with getting first base settled so early in the offseason, that they've got a team in place and they can tweak as they wish. They don't have to fill a big vacancy. They don't have to get involved in free agent frenzy and all that stuff.
Well, you know, you mentioned first base. I mean, that's certainly a position where many teams have their best hitter, and all teams look to have really productive players, and for a while now, a couple years at least, it's been a trouble spot for the Brewers and a real void. The trade for Adam Lind with the from the Blue Jays for Marco Estrada, on the surface, you look at Lind's 2014 season and you can see why he was made expendable. A guy, only 6 home runs in a hitter ballpark and a lineup where guys were hitting a ton of home runs. Now, in fairness, only 290 at-bats. Not a guy that was in there to get the 500 at-bats you'd want your first baseman to get. But underneath those numbers, an 860 OPS still seems to be a highly productive hitter. And I don't have the Brewers' numbers off the top of my head, but those first basemen have been between 600 and 650 the last couple of years, right, Adam? What did Doug Melvin and the other Brewers say about Lynn's game at this point in his career? What are they expecting from him?
Well, you know, they're expecting him to hit right-handed pitching, which is what he's done. And the question is, can he stay healthy? Now, that is open-ended. We won't know that until we get into the season. Last year, the issue was a back that has given him trouble in previous years. And then a fluky thing, he broke a foot. Fractured foot and that sideline in for a while. That one, you know, that's a fluke injury. The back is a little troubling, you know, and so you can't. They hope to put this guy in as the nearly everyday player. There aren't a lot of left-handed starting pitchers in the National League Central. That figured into the Brewers' decision to pick him up, despite his rather dramatic split lefty-righty. They can play Jonathan Lucroy. They can spell him at catcher and play him at first base when the Brewers face a tough lefty. Maybe they'll look to put in a different right-handed hitter at first base on the days when the Brewers face a tough lefty. But those days are reasonably few in this particular division. So if Lind is healthy, you referenced his OPS. He's traditionally a high on-base guy. Those things were very appealing for a Brewers team that needed a player to add a player like that at first base because they are free-swinging. Was well documented last season. They are free swinging and they don't apologize for it. So Lind brings them a more of a professional style approach at the plate, and that was big. And what Doug Melvin said is, you look at the pool of, say, free agents that were available, the pool of potential trade targets. It was very thin. The Brewers were attached to Adam LaRoche early, and Doug Melvin mentioned him by name as a guy who would have been a Brewers target. But you look at what happened to Doug Melvin last year when first base was a big hole for the Brewers. He looked at James Loney. He looked at Justin Morneau. Those guys signed with other clubs. The Brewers tried to make a deal for Ike Davis with the Mets. The ask was too high. And they ended up signing Mark Reynolds and Lyle Overbay on minor league deals. Those guys gave great defense, but last in the National League in OPS for the second straight season at first base. That just wasn't going to fly for a team that fell off dramatically offensively and needed to infuse a little offense. So Doug Melvin looked around and said, we can make this deal now. We can deal from a position of strength. Marco Estrada was going to be a long man. Arbitration eligible. He was going to cost a little bit. And it was, from the Brewers' perspective, a deal that made a lot of sense. They're investing $8 million in Adam Lind with this year's salary plus a buyout should they go that way for an option for another season. And it spares Doug Melvin what happened last year where you get deep into the offseason, the options dry up, and you're left with a premium position in your lineup and having to kind of mix and match. They didn't want to do that again, and thus they struck early this year and made this deal for Adam Lind. It's going to come down to health, as it does so often with trades. If he's healthy, his history suggests that he's going to be an upgrade over what this team has fielded at first base over the last couple of seasons.
Well, one last question that we'll let you go, Adam. But, you know, I know it's not a farm system that has players, especially position players, knocking at the door. And maybe, you know, you go out and get a Lind because you don't really trust Hunter Morris or, you know, you don't have the answers near the top of your system. But just wondering in winter ball, Arizona Fall League, anywhere else, if there's a prospect or two that has kind of created a buzz or that they're watching closely this offseason.
Well, what's interesting about the Brewers is you're right. Their farm system is not highly rated. On the other side, Doug Melvin and his people really make a strong case that is bogus. They like the players they have, and they keep pointing, and I think they have a point, at the fact that they've advanced so many players in recent seasons to the major leagues for the Brewers and for other teams. Look at the World Series this year. Alcides Escobar came up through the Brewers system. Lorenzo Cain, the star of the ALCS, and you know, also had a good World Series. A Brewers, you know, middle-round draft pick who developed in Milwaukee's system. Brett Laurie netted the Brewers Sean Markham and got, you know, who helped get Milwaukee to the NLCS. You look at Michael Brantley, an MVP candidate in the American League. He helped get the Brewers CC Sabathia back in 2008, a Brewers draft pick who came up through their system. And then in Milwaukee's own, on Milwaukee's own team now, Chris Davis, Scooter Gennett, Willie Peralta. They've not done that bad a job of getting players to the major leagues. Now, are any of these, you know, I said Brantley is an MVP candidate. Some of those players are still, you know, developing into stars. Maybe they won't get to be stars. But the point that Doug Melvin makes is we've produced major league talent and should get some more credit for that than the Brewers do. So that's kind of the battle that they fight with those who do the rankings, who don't think very highly of Milwaukee's system. I'll give you a couple of players in the system now. Tyrone Taylor is an outfielder who a lot of people are excited about. He's considered the number one prospect now that Jimmy Nelson has graduated to the big leagues. Five-tool type player who should play in the big leagues. The other guy who's really intriguing right now is Clint Coulter, who was a first-round pick a couple of years ago, a catcher. They gave him a long opportunity at catcher. The thought was that for him to really be the offensive player he can be, they needed to move him off that position. So they did, and it looks like right field is going to be his spot. He's been working on that in the fall league, playing occasionally. Mostly they just wanted to expose him to the workouts with those high-level players, get him, you know, extend his season a little bit more so he can work in right field. That could awaken his bat even further, and he's a really intriguing player. He's going to hit. And it's just a matter of can he play defense well enough at a certain at a position on the diamond to get up to the big leagues and be a good player. I think the odds are in his favor as well. And there are more. You know, are there any MVPs in there? I don't know. But there certainly are players that are going to advance to the big leagues in the next couple of years because, again, Milwaukee has shown that they've been able to produce those types of players.
Well, thanks very much, Adam, joined by Mark Shelton, World Series behind Major League Baseball, the hot stove season arriving, and it's crunch time for the Reds, I would say, looking at their roster. But, Mark, before we get talking about the roster crunch, as always, it's the health that plays into it. And just wondering, in the aftermath of 2014 when the health of Joey Votto and Brandon or Phillips was an issue, what's kind of the outlook for those two guys heading into or towards spring training? All, you know, full green light, or will the team worry about those guys until they're back and really establish their health?
Well, I think in Votto's case, it's probably they want to make sure. I think most people will feel better when they see him healthy and producing on the field. But they do anticipate that a full off season of rehabilitation and rest and all the things that he has to do to get himself ready should make him 100%. It was always a long-term outlook that he needed more time to get ready. Obviously, they were preparing him to play, even though it wasn't realistic at the end of the season. But I would suspect he will be 100%, at least in theory. But you will never know until you see him on the field. The one person you may have to watch out for as far as not being ready could be Homer Bailey. He had the flexor mass tendon operation. He's going to start throwing in December like he's supposed to. But there was a possibility that he may not be ready, and he might have to miss a start or two at the beginning of the regular season. But they're hopeful that he can still be ready in time.
Moving on to that roster, and we go right to the starting rotation. You know, I know when we were looking ahead at trade deadline and talking about looking forward to 2015, managing the payroll, a big issue for Walt Jocketty and his front office. Last year, the opening day payroll, $114 million, and by my math now, already $87 million committed after they did what teams must hate the most, buying out Ryan Ludwig and Hanahan, $6.5 million total there for guys that won't play for him next year, and now really crunched by arbitration cases. I've got 9 of them, including Latos, Leak, and Alfredo Simon, 3/5 of the rotation, and for good measure, Aroldis Chapman thrown in there. And just how serious is this payroll crunch? Do you think they're looking at going into next year with the same basic opening day payroll?
I don't expect them to slash payroll, because if they were going to do that, I think they would have been more active at the trade deadline, because they could have got a head start on it, and they were pretty out of it by then. And they have an owner in Bob Castellini who really wants to win. They're going into the All-Star season where the Cincinnati's hosting the All-Star game. I just don't see them slashing payroll. However, in order to meet payroll and keep it at where it is and growing, they may have to make some hard decisions. What they're really faced with is they need to add a left fielder, they need to add offense, they need some bullpen help, but they don't have the ability to go out and make a huge expenditure. So that leaves them maybe making some trades. The starting pitching is where the depth is. They have the 4 guys that are a year away from free agency. And you know, I talked to Walt Jocketty recently, and he said that they may have to trade one of their starting pitchers, especially if they don't think they can sign them long-term. So it's going to be an interesting winter in how they negotiate with guys. They have Johnny Cueto already, his option picked up for $10 million for next season. So they at least know they have him and what they have him for. The other guys, it's a little more of a mystery because they have to go through the arbitration process, like you mentioned. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be a very tough winter to find players that can fit in the budget.
As you know, we're still a month out from the winter meetings. Would you expect that they would be exploring extensions with the unsigned guys, with Latos, Leak, and Simon, and then no question, I think with any of those pitchers, if they were shopping them at the winter meetings, they would be a very, very popular team. What do you think happened in this time leading up? Is it maybe there's a contract out there for the one guy who wants some security and to stay there and not be shopped at the winter meetings?
You know, with the arbitration process, it's hard to say, because last year they got Homer Bailey's contract done at spring training. It didn't get done until February. But here with the, like you said, with the winter meetings coming up and the possibility they might need to make trades, if they don't think they can get a long-term deal, they may want to move somebody. So it's a bind. But I think they're going to be actively trying to sign some guys long-term who they identified. I think Cueto is the sure thing that they definitely want to sign long-term. They also want to maybe look at signing some of the other arbitration guys, like the more cost certain contracts, like Todd Frazier or Zach Cozart. I wouldn't rule that out either. But in terms of the pitchers, I think they try to make a move on these guys, and if they find that they're not going to make any headway, or that it's very unlikely, or that a pitcher or two are headed for free agency, no matter what, they may make a move.
Yeah, you mentioned the need to add offense. I mean, they were 13th in the National League in runs scored and 5th in runs allowed. So great work in 14 by their pitchers, especially based in a hitter park. But that the run production, 8th in home runs, you would almost always think in that ballpark the Reds would be in the top third of the league in home runs, and that kind of fall back in the middle of the pack does grab your eye. That left field, Ludwig, you know, we saw him in glimpses really contributing there, but never really established that sort of production from left field. That's sort of been the open hole there for a while. And would you, if they do use their pitching surplus to trade for a hitter, I mean, it's pretty clear. Left field's the spot. Well, and just any feel for how what the market would be like to find a run producing left fielder? I mean, it seems like a lot of teams are looking for hitting, not just the Reds.
Yeah, the Reds are not only really looking for a left fielder, but they'd like to get a guy that can actually have a higher on base percentage than they had. They were as a team, they had an on base percentage of .296, which I think was 14th out of 15 NL teams. They really went down that area because in large part they didn't have Votto, and Shin-Soo Chu was no longer on the team. And I think they would like to get someone for that top third of the order, probably second. that can get on base ahead of Votto and allow them, and thus allow the opportunity for guys like him and Frazier, Mesoraco, and Phillips and Bruce to drive in the run. So I think that's the direction they're going to go into, whether they can find that guy on the trade market. I mean, there's some free agents like Nori Aoki or, you know, that could maybe fit that bill. Michael Kodire seemed like a really nice candidate until his qualifying offer was extended by the Rockies, but that would have been a good one for them. But I don't know on the trade market who the specific names that have been linked to the team yet that haven't really surfaced.
Yeah, Nori Aoki is an interesting one. You think that the kind of a table setter, dynamic, top of the order guy at this point would be a better fit than a run producing type of left fielder, which was sort of the idea with Ludwig.
Well, I think it'd be cheaper. Number one, I don't think it would cost as much. The dynamic home run and RBI guy may cost a few more millions of dollars, and it may cost more in terms of what you trade for. An Aoki type of guy or of his ilk might be a cheaper free agent addition, a short-term addition as well, because they do have prospects coming like Jesse Winker, who's going to play left field eventually, or even if Yorman Rodriguez comes into his own. They have some options that in the system that they're not quite ready yet, but they, you know, you may not want to commit a five-year contract to a left fielder right now when they can get someone to kind of bridge the gap. But I think that they believe that if they have some of the guys that come back from the injuries and the down years, I don't expect Jay Bruce to have another year like he just had, that if everyone's healthy and is back to producing, that if they add this left fielder, that they can get back to where they were offensively a couple years ago.
Hey, I do want to ask you about a couple of the prospects, but before I do it, the Cuban pitcher Iglesias signed for $27 million over 7 years, kind of quietly this year. What is his situation? Usually the guys that get those kind of contracts from Cuba, you hear all sort of talk about it, but it seems like the talk on him has been sort of quiet. What's his situation?
He is currently in the Arizona Fall League. He came to the United States in August, and he went right to Arizona to begin working out. After about a year off, he was in Haiti doing his workouts, and he was in shape, but not in baseball shape. And he was doing okay out there. They had instructional league, and then the plan originally was, after the instructional league, was to go to Puerto Rico for winter ball. Well, now he had two games in the AFL, and then they gave him a third one, and now they've decided that he's just going to finish the Arizona Fall League season and then go to spring training, you know, down the road in February. They feel like they have better control over his pitch count and his workload doing it here rather than sending him somewhere else. So they still identify him as a future starter, which could aid in them in their long-term planning, as we talked about with the starting pitchers that are a year away from free agency. So they like him that way. They think he's got four good pitches, and if he doesn't work out as a starter, he'd be a very dynamic bullpen guy.
Well, another Fall League guy, we saw him in the Fall Stars game, who I know a lot of scouts loved in college, Nick Howard, the first-round pick. What is sort of his outlook now as he's getting established as a pro?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the name. Which guy?
Nick Howard.
Oh, Nick Howard. Yes. Well, he didn't. I know he has kind of high numbers in the AFL, but they also like him as a starter. He was a reliever in college, but they like his power stuff. They think he could be a really strong power arm, right-handed pitcher. And I know he had a pretty good year, I think, in Dayton during the summer, his first pro season. They were happy with what he did, and they just wanted to keep growing.
All right. Thank you very much, Mark. Joined by Kerry Muscat, Cubs beat reporter. And Kerry, big changes at Wrigley Field. Big changes to Wrigley Field. You walk by the stadium now, you can look right in from left field to right field with no walls out there. But the big development, managerial change, and the hiring of Joe Madden, free agent leaving the Tampa Bay Rays. How do you see the Madden hire impacting the Cubs? I know it's a big question.
Well, I think it might have been a change that Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer were considering in the future in terms of, I think they wanted to see Rick Renteria for another year. That was sort of the original plan. when they went into the off season. But when Joe Maddon became available, they couldn't pass it up. To me, the Cubs made the biggest free agent splash before free agency really got underway. They grabbed kind of the biggest name, and they're ready to go. Now, Theo has said that this won't change their off-season approach, but I'm thinking that what it does do is it gives the Cubs a little more ammunition in terms of their negotiations with potential free agents. You know, they're going to go into these meetings, and people are going to say, yeah, I'd like to play for Joe, when maybe some players might not have been as comfortable saying, yes, I'd like to play for Ricky. And that's not a knock on Renteria. It's just that people maybe don't know him as well.
At that news conference, I was kind of struck. I know it's, you know, the revolving door at the manager's office has been a regular feature at Wrigley Field for more than four decades. Leo Durocher, the last manager there longer than 5 years. And, you know, I guess we're all trying to see into the future to see this. But is it far-fetched to see Joe Maddon as a guy that's going to be there beyond this five-year contract and, you know, maybe have one of those long runs like Bruce Bochy's had in San Francisco and, you know, the guys that have been in place a long time? It seems like the Cubs are hiring a guy not just for the next couple of years, but for the long haul.
Well, they did give Madden a five-year deal. He is 60, which, although he says 60 is the new 40, so I guess he's really only 40. So in 5 years, he'll be 45, if you go by his math. And, you know, potentially he could be there longer. I think anybody would want to be with the Cubs in terms of the baseball operations and the management position and Joe's position, mainly because you want to see what happens with these kids over the next 5 years. You know, you want to see what happens with the Chris Bryant. You want to see what happens with Jorge Soler. You want to see what happens with Kyle Hendricks. So really, I mean, Madden's called it a once-in-a-107-year lifetime opportunity. I would think there's quite a few people out there that would really like this chance.
Kerry, you know the Chicago market too, not just the Cubs franchise, and it seems like in our city, I mean, we love our coaches and our managers that will kind of charm the public and be forceful with their comments and their commentary. Madden's really sort of a game changer in that department, don't you think? He'll put the Cubs in the dialogue regardless.
Well, you mean in terms of what happened at the news conference? It had to be one of the more entertaining news conferences I've ever been part of. So I don't ever remember manager one offering to buy a round, which he did. But it's different. There's a different energy. There's a different vibe at Wrigley, I'm sure, with fans. I know the feedback that I've gotten from fans, they're pretty giddy about this, so we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, absolutely. A little bogus on that buying around, wasn't it, given that the bar wasn't open? They seem to have gotten a lot of traction off of that. I guess it was a funny moment, but I think we're all still waiting for that shot in the beer that we were promised.
Yeah, I think part of the problem is that most of us had to work still. I don't think Joe quite realized that, you know, it's some of us still had a lot of work to do. So, but I have a feeling that he may offer again. So.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right on that. Moving forward to the hot stove, you know, it seems like the Cubs have as much financial flexibility as maybe any team in the market, with only about, locking up Tsuyoshi Wada now, they're at about $35 million committed in salary. Doesn't factor in a lot of arbitration eligible players, but, do you have a ballpark guess at what the payroll figure would be when all things are, done this winter? Are we looking at kind of another year where they'll have an $80, $90 million payroll?
Well, yeah, I don't have a ballpark figure. I know Castillo has tried to keep us kind of caution us a little bit by saying that he's not necessarily going to go spending crazy this off season. He's looking at kind of a 15 months ahead because he's also looking at the free agents that will be available after next off season. So he's sort of anticipating that. He's talked a lot about a 15 month stretch. They don't have the Soriano money. You're right that their payroll is very flexible. They don't have the Soriano money anymore that they're obligated to. But they do have a lot of guys that are ARB eligible that they have to deal with. I can see them, you know, making a play for one of the big free agent pitchers out there. But I think also Theo might have learned his lesson from the Edwin Jackson contract and be a little, I wasn't quite sure what to call it, but with the contract and just sort of be a little more be cautious, you know, when they go out there and consider a John Lester or a Max Scherzer or somebody like that.
Yeah, wouldn't you think James Shields would also be high on their list, the guy with ties to Madden? And, well, I saw him a lot in the playoffs with Kansas City, and he did not look like a number one type starter, but moving to the National League and it's intangible, don't you think he's also a guy that could be in play?
Yeah, I could see Shields mainly because of the Madden connection. And again, I think another thing that Theo tried to caution fans about and cautioned us about is, you know, you can't really gauge. It's too small a sample size, I think they felt, you know, for what these guys did in the postseason. You can't just dismiss them and say, well, you know, they're terrible because, you know, they didn't throw pitch like Madison Bumgarner every time out. So I think he's trying to be careful with that. I'd be curious to see what they do.
Yeah, if you went up to the playoffs, you'd have to say, no, I don't really want that Clayton Kershaw, that Adam Wainwright. He's a wide
exactly.
Bomb.
Yeah.
I mean, Bumgarner was about the only number one starter that really pitched like a number one starter in the playoffs. One other position that interests me is you do hear talk, Russell Martin talk. I think he's an impact player. I think he kind of proved it in Pittsburgh. It had a lot to do with their playoffs the last 2 years. But the Cubs have a perfectly good catcher in Wellington Castillo. I was just looking up defensive runs saved, and he had 15.3, ranked fourth among major league catchers in that defensive metric. Do you think they're looking to upgrade a catcher if they would get a crack at signing a Russell Martin?
I think they would look to upgrade, but I don't think they want to get in a bidding war. And I think there are quite a few other teams that might be interested in Martin. The problem, Wellington has improved considerably since he first came up. The problem is keeping him healthy, number one. And number two, his offense they were hoping that he would pick up after the second half of last year, and it didn't. So I think the combination of the offensive struggles and him not being able to stay 100% healthy makes them look at what's out there on the market. You know, Martin would be a great addition, but I don't sense that Theo wants to be, you know, going toe-to-toe with the Dodgers or somebody else who might also be interested in him.
Yeah, I think he's going to be looking for a really big contract. One thing he offers that I think is important, though, and whether it just doesn't necessarily have to be a regular, but I think if you start talking about them, the Cubs, as a contender, playoff team, looking through their clubhouse, I'm not sure they really have the, I don't even want to call it leadership, but the veteran gristle. They don't really have many players that have, you know, that high pressure down the stretch in September type experience. And do you think they could maybe be and will be looking to add a guy or two like that, whether it's a bench player or, you know, if it could be a regular?
Well, a guy like Russell Martin would certainly fill that void. I do think they're missing out on the leadership. Yeah, they have a lot of talented kids, but they're kids, and they don't quite know what to expect. You know, you take a guy like if they could have kept Justin Ruggiano healthy, you know, Ruggiano at least is a veteran player, has some experience, could help guys. That's why, to me, Carlos Villanueva was so key down in the bullpen. He really helped those kids in terms of getting them to learn their roles, learn the job, excuse me. So I think that's a guy that's going to be missed. But no, that's the type of player they will be looking for. It's a veteran guy and somebody with experience.
Yeah, and one last thing before we go. I know you, after the season ended, you were able to make a trip like you usually do to the Arizona Fall League. And I was just wondering if you had one or two things you saw out there that kind of captured your fancy.
Well, I didn't get to see too many Fall League games, unfortunately, but what I enjoy is going to Instructional League. And it's sort of that's kind of going basic, you know, down to the kids that are the new draft picks and the Class A level. The guy that's the most exciting to me is their number one pick last year, Kyle Schwarber, because I think a lot of people were talking that he should give up catching and move to the outfield and just put the gear away. And after some sessions with the catching instructor, Tim Cousins, and some other work with Mark Johnson, who was the Kane County manager, they really feel like Schwarber has much better defensive positioning and much better approach behind the plate. And they're gung-ho now with him as a catcher. And I think that's going to be somebody to sort of keep an eye on in spring training to see how far he comes.
Yeah, and I think that's maybe patience. You know, I think his bat looks like such a smart hitter and the power that he could come quick as an outfielder, but as a catcher he'll have to pay his dues and work his way up a little more slowly maybe.
Yeah, but one of the things they felt was that in college his setup was wrong and he was catching from like one knee down type thing, and they fixed that. And I know Tim Cousins likes to get excited about the catching prospects, but this was a legitimate excitement. And I also talked to some scouts that were down there watching that had seen Schwarber earlier, and they were really impressed with how far he had come just from earlier in the college season. So, I mean, the sessions he's had with Mark Johnson, with Tim Cousins, have really paid off. And I know he was going to do a little extra work at some of their mini camps this winter to sort of keep building on that. So it could be that Schwarber moves up a lot faster and stays behind the plate, which would be a really big plus for the Cubs.
Yeah. All right. That's great, Kerry. I do appreciate it. For Kerry Muscat, this is Phil Rogers. This has been MLB.com Extras.
Visit the official online shop of Major League Baseball at MLB.com/shop for the largest selection of authentic caps, T-shirts, jerseys, hoodies, collectibles, and more. Get your gear straight from the source, the MLB.com shop.